Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We discuss wildlife today, and we welcome back Ward Stone to answer your questions about everything from white nose syndrome and bats to the wild animals you may see in your backyard. The former wildlife pathologist for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, Ward Stone, is an expert on the flora and fauna you see in your backyard and throughout the state. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Ward Stone, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Great, Ray. I feel great being here.
It's nice to have you back. Let's talk about skunks for a minute. Where do they live, and how many of them are there? In other words, in an average family, a skunk family.
Well, there could be four or five babies.
Okay.
Plus the mother.
Okay, no father?
So six
father just
max.
Leaves?
Usually a couple. Father, there's a father, but he doesn't hang out with the family.
Okay. And where do they burrow into the ground? Where do they live?
They usually use a spot that's already been dug for them.
Okay.
Like a woodchuck hole, old woodchuck hole.
Okay.
They often live in those. They may live underneath a barn.
All right.
Crawl space in the area there. But they're... under a big pile of brush that they can crawl back in and find a spot, but usually in the ground someplace.
Okay, and they, what do they eat in general? I'll tell you why I asked this in a minute.
They do a lot of good things for us. They're an omnivore, but they eat a lot of insects. They eat fruit. They eat small rodents.
Okay, so they'll eat whatever they can get their hands on.
They eat just about whatever they can get.
The reason I ask, because in my backyard, we apparently now have a family of skunks. And we saw them out in the back. It's not a huge yard. We saw some motion, turned the lights on one night, and there were a couple of grown-ups running around. And then the other night, there was a little baby skittering around on our patio.
Yeah, they're really cute.
Yeah, they're really cute, but so far no one has been skunked.
They haven't run into a dog or something that made them...
No, but we
smell.
There is a cat around, and I fear for the cat. Mm-hmm. Are cats smart enough to stay away from the skunks?
Not necessarily, but usually they are.
Okay, fair enough. Number to call.
The skunks are really, really interesting and nice animals.
So they're, if
but
not
they
provoked,
they do have that bad odor about them. But a lot of times they're going to be skidding around on the lawns now because they're going to be after the insects.
Okay, so it's not uncommon. This is the first time I've seen more than the odd one running around. But this year we've seen a few more than once.
Yeah, you know this is Japanese beetle time.
Ah.
And so they're coming out of the ground, the beetles are. And so they're eating a lot of the grubs.
You know, that is funny because the two grown-ups we saw, and I think it actually was I don't think it was fully dark, might have been dusk, they looked like they were nosing around into the dirt. So that must have been what they were doing.
They'll come and they do a lot of good in controlling insects, but people get very upset with it because it digs little holes in what they think is a nice lawn.
Well, ours isn't nice. I never thought that.
They're actually doing a lot of good by controlling the insect population in the sod of your lawn.
So let them be.
Let them be.
All right. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Ward Stone is our guest. The lines are loaded. Let's go to Lee in Saratoga. Hi, Lee. You're first.
Hey, it's good to hear Ward's voice.
Indeed.
Good to be here.
Yeah, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Listen, Ward, I wanted to know about the kestrel population in New York State and in the Northeast. I was reading that they were on the decline and that there was a downward trend amongst those small bird of prey species. And I don't know if you could shed some light on that as to why that might be, and even if anecdotally you could speak about that.
Well, I'm very concerned about that myself. I was thinking about that. Their population is down. They've attempted to do something about that by putting up nest boxes, as you probably know. But still, their population is down. There's some talk about competition with slightly bigger birds of prey, things like... Cooper's hawks out-competing them. But their population is down, and they need a lot of research. There is a birdhouse that you can put out to give them nest sites. And Peter Nye, who was the head of endangered species, used to put up a number of houses on his own, I think, for the species. And that's something that could be done. But we need to do research on it. It needs to be a priority and find out what is going on with the kestrel.
Okay.
It's probably our most beautiful bird of prey.
All right.
Arguably, but certainly the male kestrel is incredibly beautiful.
Lee, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Martha in Gansevoort. Martha, you're on.
Hi, Ward. It's wonderful to have you back. And I have a question about rehabilitators and rabies. A number of years ago, I had a mother raccoon living in my tree, and I didn't, you know, want her to come down with rabies. It was all around. And I managed to have her vaccinated twice. I caught her in a box trap, and she was vaccinated twice in a period of 7 years and survived. Well, I was talking to a rehabilitator today, and I said, well, you know, I don't have any raccoons at the moment. If you have any, you can release them near my place. And then I happened to say, and they're all vaccinated for rabies, aren't they? And they said, no, they couldn't get them vaccinated. The vet wouldn't come to vaccinate them at their place and wouldn't let them bring them up to be vaccinated, you know, at their place. And as rehabilitators, they would do it themselves if they were allowed to. And I think this is criminal. Another rehabilitator told me that the DEC doesn't care how many of the animals die of rabies because then they get fewer nuisance calls. And I would like to see the law change so that these kind people who rehabilitate these animals are allowed to vaccinate them for rabies.
Ward?
I think, you know, there's different kinds of vaccines that can be used. But that's something that should be looked into, and I think that's a good idea. You're the Martha that that I worked with over the years, right?
Yes, and you did a wonderful job helping me with both raccoons and coyotes.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And the old coyote that you helped me with is still alive.
The one that had mange, right?
I have photos of her. What?
The one that had a mange at one point.
Yes, yes.
And we treated it for mange.
Yes. Yep, she's still alive.
Okay.
Amazing.
Well, thanks, Martha. We
appreciate
the call.
That's really good. Are you still doing your art?
Yes, I am. I've got an art show coming up this Saturday in Saratoga at Spa Fine Art.
Well, there you go.
Very nice.
You got a plug-in. Way to go, Martha. Thank you very much.
Very good.
Let's go to Jeff in Rosendale.
Nice talking to you, Martha.
You're on.
Hello, guys. My question has to do with hummingbirds. I've been watching them a lot lately, and I can't understand how they are able to produce so much energy from the nectar that they drink. I mean, it seems that you need a ton of energy to fuel those wings as much as they do, and I just can't see how they get that much, unless they're processing it differently. Do you have any insight into that?
I've been wondering the same thing, and I've got out the red sugar water for them that's sold for them, but you can make yourself. And they're coming to my bean blossoms, what I call the climbing orange in honor of my university, but they're in the same family with the scarlet runner's beans. So the top of my beans are just covered with these red flowers, and they prefer to get them. And I've often wondered about that, about the nutrition. Obviously, you're getting much more when you're gathering of the food from flowers than sucking it out of a liquid that is primarily sugar. So
they're very light.
I've been noticing that there's a preference for the flowers and a variety of flowers in the hummingbirds that I'm watching, and I'm spending a lot of time watching hummingbirds for the same reason. I don't really know the answer on the calories. There's certainly plenty of calories in sugar water, as we all know from the high fructose soda controversy that's going on out there with the society with obesity. But they certainly have tremendous energy.
I would imagine it's similar to some of the hovering insects who get a tiny bit of fuel in them and are able to mechanically use these wings thousands of times a minute all day long. I just don't understand how they can do that.
But they're so light, though. It shouldn't take all that much to keep them aloft.
They can even fly backwards. I had some experience with them today. I put Bee Bomb by my rocking chair outdoors where I watch them by the garden.
Yeah.
And I have them landing within inches of my head now.
Wow.
And feeding on the Bee Bomb. So I'm getting some really good observations on them. And I just love to watch them. But they bring up these very questions as to their physiology. And, of course, at night, you know, they settle down, like when they're nesting. They have a nest made out of cobwebs and very well insulated and lichens. And so they don't burn a lot of energy. They cut down greatly.
Yeah.
They drop their body temperature down. So they conserve energy as much as they can. They also do eat some insects and so on, small insects, especially in feeding their young who need the protein.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more questions there. And,
yeah, because imagine if we could figure this out, if you could power equipment on like a sugar cube. I mean, there's something we don't know.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, Jeff, thanks a lot for the call.
Bumblebee does pretty well, too. If you're watching the hummingbirds, like I am, you see a lot of bumblebees.
Nearby.
The honeybee, yeah, I mean, very nearby. They almost collide in the air around these blossoms.
Yeah, we have one right outside our kitchen window, and we watch the bees and the hummingbirds just sort of fly right around each other.
Right around each other.
No problem, no conflict that
they
I can see.
They get along perfectly, they seem to.
Ward Stone is our guest today. It is Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Lines are loaded now, but if you hear somebody hang up, then make the call. 800-348-2551. Back in a flash.
Support for WAMC comes from Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics, barrypricearchitecture.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting George Innes paintings from the permanent collection on view through August 24th, arkellmuseum.org. Kenver LTD, South Egremont, hosting a nature event with the Egremont Land Trust, Berkshire Natural Resource Council, The Nature Conservancy, and Project Native, August 15th from 5 to 7 p.m., open Thursday through Monday, kenverltd.com. And Saratoga Bridges, Boston Spa, New York, a community resource for people with disabilities and their families, supported employment, day services, and more, saratogabridges.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Wildlife pathologist Ward Stone is here, and it's second appearance in the last couple of months. And got to say, it's nice to have you back here, and I hope you make this a regular occurrence on Vox Pop.
I would certainly hope to do that.
Nice to have you here. The lines are loaded, so let's go to Ronnie in Tivoli. Ronnie, you're on.
Hi. My question is regarding rhubarb. The stems, they grow tremendous stalks with tons and tons of seeds, thousands of them every season, and yet you can germinate them from the seeds, only the rhizomes. What is the purpose of the plant putting all that energy into the stalks, the flowering stalks?
Well, I think also the energy goes into the stalks that we like to cut and make sauce and pie out of.
But that's different. Those are
below
the leaves.
That's different. That's not for seeds. That's leaves.
Tremendous stalks that are at least 3 to 4 feet high with thousands of little seeds, and you can't germinate. You can't grow them from the seeds, only from the rhizomes. And all that energy, and they're supposed to be cut off and just discarded early in the season. Why does a plant like that produce so much? And it's not like the bees are crazy about it either. So I'm just wondering if there's some purpose in nature for this to go on.
That's one of several million things that I don't know the answer to. But it's certainly a darn good question, something I've noticed. And I love the rhubarb plants. In the foliage, of course, you have the calcium oxalate, which makes them toxic to eat.
Yes, I'm aware of that. And I've always wanted to ask that question, so I thought this is the perfect opportunity. But
well, I'm going to look that up and see if I can see if anybody else has got an answer to that, other than the fact that they've been selecting the rhubarb for a long time. And there must have been a time when those seeds did work, did germinate from there. But because of all of the human selecting
Yeah, that's a good point.
Rhizomes, they probably went to the root.
And Ronnie, you might try calling the gardening show. Now, we've done it for the month of, I think, have we done it for August already? No, we may have one coming up later in the month. But the gardening show, they may be able to give you the answer to that.
Okay, I'll give them a shot. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
We go to Jan in Montgomery County. Jan, you're on.
Hi, I have just discovered a large hornet's nest right above my back stoop. Is there some way I can remove that without using pesticides? Get it out of quickly?
Okay.
What I do is, if I was going to do something like that, is you got to have some courage. But
I don't like the sound of this.
Well, because you may be stung.
Yeah.
It depends on who you are as to your sensitivity to being stung.
Yeah.
But when I was young, we used to just set them on fire, burn them up in the night.
Oh.
Go over and set it on fire. But you can put it in a bag.
Yeah, but see, it's hung on this small roof above my stoop, so I can't really...
Yeah, you don't want to set the roof on fire.
No.
No.
That will get rid
of
the hornets.
You can take a bag and you can slip that around it.
Yeah, but it's up way up high, so I can't reach it.
Oh, I see. It's way up.
Well, I could touch it probably if I reach, but I couldn't wrap or think around without getting stung, I'm sure. So.
Well, that's a good question. How would you do that then? But if they're that high, are they bothering you?
Well, I'm kind of afraid to go through that door now because they're swarming all around there. And,
yeah.
You know, I probably
How high off the ground would you have to go to reach them?
Well... To do it comfortably, you probably want to be on a small ladder, I think. Cause it's not way up there, but it's probably higher than if I reached up my arm, it's higher than that, probably.
Well, I would, if I was going to remove them, then I'd probably be prone to let them stay. If they haven't done anything to you at this point, and they're going to
But if they're swarming around the door and it's a hazard.
I'd go up and put a bag around the nest.
At night?
At night, in the dark, when it's cold.
They're asleep?
No, because I checked them last night. What if I just poked them with a shovel and knocked it off? Would that get me at night like if I did that? Or
Nothing like making hornets irritated.
I know. I don't know.
You're going to do it in the night in the dark?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
There are pesticides that one can use, such as Carbaryl 7, that really is very, very toxic to bees. And they have a little long nozzle sticking out, small bore nozzle, so that you can shoot it up there right on the nest.
Yeah.
Just don't want to get up.
But I would go up there and take it down and put it in the bag.
Okay.
And dispose
of it. Where would you bring it to? Would you bring it to the neighbor's yard and leave it there, or what would you do with
it? No, I like my neighbors, so.
Yeah, okay.
I would take it and probably burn it.
Okay. All right, well, Jan, thanks a lot, and good luck. Let's go to Fran in Mechanicville. Fran, you're on with Ward Stone.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have some woodchucks. They're in my garden, but I've tried to, deter them by putting up fencing and everything because they were having a little taste of everything in there. But they seem to have made their way under a shed that I have. And I don't want to kill them. I don't want to trap them or whatever. I just want to get them, make sure that they're not under the shed because I know that they are in there in the morning, but then they seem to be out of there in the afternoon. But I'm not too sure. So I'm wondering, is there a way that I can, deter them from going in there and just, not have to trap them or anything?
It'll probably take quite a bit of work to determine now because I suspect they're living under the shed and they may actually have a burrow under there besides going under the shed. And so I think it's going to be a problem. Probably you need to bury wire around the shed after they're out of there.
Okay.
So that they can't dig back under easily.
Hmm.
Okay.
But that being said, it's pretty hard to stop woodchucks. By the way, I like woodchucks a lot. I've raised them. I can recall sitting in a rocking chair with a woodchuck young one and feeding it a bottle.
Really?
Just like one of my kids.
Oh,
and that woodchuck grew up to be a very friendly woodchuck, ate 10 pounds.
Yeah.
And very friendly to me. So I have a soft spot four woodchucks. But they, like going to a garden, you like say you put chicken wire fence around it,
mm-hmm.
foot and a half high, 2 foot high,
mm-hmm.
3 foot, 4 foot, they'll climb right over it.
Yeah.
They oh, can my climb, God, they will?
They can climb over a fence of that height.
Oh, my
and
God.
They can dig under the fence.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
So that won't stop them at all from
I'll be
that.
Darn.
However, you can spray with rotten eggs or something of that sort, which will leave the vegetation with a bad taste for a time. And I did that. I'm at a place in Troy right now recovering from the strokes
yeah.
in the retirement home. And I sprayed my garden with a rotten egg solution for several weeks. And the
uh-huh.
deer and things learned not to eat it because it tastes bad.
Uh-huh.
So then I stop. And as long as they don't discover that I stopped, I got the vegetables being produced and not being eaten because they think it still smells and tastes bad.
Brilliant.
Oh, okay.
From what they
okay.
learned, which can work with the woodchucks as well and cottontail rabbits.
All right, Fran, thanks a lot for the call. Why do they call them woodchucks, by the way? Do they chuck wood?
I think because there was a low population level of chucks in the woods when the European settlers came. And so they called them woodchucks for that reason. How much wood does a woodchuck chuck if a wood could?
I mean, that's the eternal question.
Chuck wood, huh?
Larry in Spencertown. Larry, you're on with Ward Stone.
Yes, thank you. It's great to hear you, Ward, and great to have you back. I used to be at DEC, if you recall. In either case, I just wanted to report that neighbors told me that they just observed a pair of kestrels nesting and fledging. And one other thing is I've seen a woodchuck 20 feet in the tree before.
So wow.
It's not uncommon. Yeah, that's all. Thanks. Yep.
Thanks, Larry.
Well, I come from Spencertown, so.
Oh, yeah?
Last time I was talking with this gentleman, it was about construction debris.
Ah.
We had a professional interest in construction debris and the pollution that it causes.
Uh-huh.
But he also does a lot of farming, and he knows from where he speaks when it comes to woodchucks and cattle.
So a woodchuck, not uncommon for a woodchuck to be up in a tree. Amazing.
Not uncommon. They'll go up and get an apple or something of that sort that they want.
Isn't nature wonderful? Let's go to
I mean, they're not a squirrel in a tree. They're kind of chucky and...
Yeah, well, I'll keep my eyes open.
Rotund, but they do get up.
Teresa in Great Barrington, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a funny question about... I have a bunch of crows that sort of hang out in my yard, and sometimes I will have extra bread and leave things for them, and they, you know, they're a little bit noisy, but they normally don't bother me. But lately they have been, in the morning, they land on my roof and it sounds like they're pecking at my roof and making quite a ruckus, you know, early in the morning. And I've, you know, opened the window and kind of like barked at them, which my neighbors probably think I'm crazy, and they fly away. But I just wondered, I mean, will they poke through my roof, and do I need to find a way to get rid of them? And if so, how do I get rid of them?
Well, like crows a lot, and they are our second smartest bird that lives in New York, raven probably being the smartest and crows being next.
And they're relatives, right?
And they're really close relatives. They belong to the same family, the Corvidae.
Hmm.
So I wonder, is there anything else falling on your roof? Fruit or mulberries?
No, there are no trees around my roof. It's in an open, very sunny area. I think I've seen them up there, you know, they sort of spread their wings out, so I don't know if they're hanging out up there because they're sunning themselves or something, but it's early in the morning.
What about termites?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. That's scary, a scary thought. I do have a full shed dormer,
I think it's more likely that they're warming up in the early morning sun,
okay.
And they got a good place to land there.
I don't think,
and I was thinking if there was fruit or something falling there, they might be attracted to that.
No, there's nothing.
I get off, get away from your yard, get some binoculars, and watch them up there without chasing them away, and see exactly what they are doing.
That's a good idea.
Okay. It sounds like they're pecking. That's why I say.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It's almost
see
like a
whether
wood
or not there's something up there that they're eating.
Okay.
Some sort of insects that they're going after or something of that sort.
Okay.
It's more likely that they're sitting up there and enjoying the view and catching the sun for a period of time.
Okay.
But, you know, you can find a spot probably where you can see them better and take a pair of binoculars and watch them.
Okay.
And they are a fascinating bird. They are greatly feared and hated by many, but they are a highly intelligent bird with an important ecological role in nature.
Thanks, Teresa. Why would they be feared, Ward?
Because they've been, and writers have written a lot, and when they have, they've often used the black crows.
Quote the raven, Poe and whatnot. I see. Okay, I get your point. Let's go to...
As evil and bad and all that.
Lynn in Shelburne. Lynn, you're on
Hello,
with Ward Rick. Stone. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
All things have been called in. People seem to be so afraid of animals when we're actually taking over their property. But
That's true.
Skunks actually... Huh?
It's very true.
Skunks seem to be okay with cats as long as not threatened.
With cats? That's
yeah,
good. That's good news for our cat. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless they're really threatened, they don't seem to care. Skunks don't want to do it. My question is about butterflies. Can you ask me, tell me if they're butterflies at all?
What do you want to know?
Well, I'd like to grow some milkweed, and I'm growing it in my garden. It looks like, you know, poopy. And I would like to keep growing it. But I see no butterflies, no monarchs around here. How can I help that?
I've been watching really hard. In fact, when I had the show here in our backyard, we spent a lot of time talking about how I thought that the monarch butterfly was going to go almost to extinction.
It's gone so far.
And I have only seen two monarchs in 2 years, and I do a lot of looking. So they are way down. And that's,
I do too.
That's partly due to pesticides, to cleaning up of yards and removing the milkweed so that it's not around for raising the larvae, because as far as I know, the larvae are entirely dependent upon milkweed for food.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's right.
But isn't it also because their native habitat down south is being eradicated?
The trees that they actually go to in Mexico in the winter, some of them have been cut down. The Mexicans have recently seen there's an advantage to having monarch butterflies, tens of thousands of them on a tree at one time, from the point of view of taking tourists and so are there, so they're paying for being there. But the trees have continued being cut down.
Oh.
And, you know, they get hit on highways. They get sprayed.
They've been gone down, like, I don't know.
They run a gauntlet
100%.
Of...
They've gone down like, from something to almost 10% of what they were doing.
Now, you're raising...
milkweed.
The milkweed right in your yard.
I'm not really raising anything. I just keep the milkweed growing in my yard. So I don't... cut it down. It's not very much.
Well, if they need it, there's milkweed there. If
how
we had more and more people should be doing that.
Like
I want to commend you for doing that.
Thank you. How
even if they
more?
Don't get there. And the milkweed's a beautiful plant.
It smells delicious.
And, you know, it's a beautiful plant to see growing.
Hmm.
And Mary
you
in Delmar,
yeah,
she's got a natural flowers.
Oh, yeah?
And a lot of butterflies coming in.
Okay.
On Kenaware Ave in Kenwood.
All right. Well, Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. I think we've seen my daughters sort of watch for them, and they've seen a few this year.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad you have.
All right, let's go to Ralph in Saugerties. Ralph, you're on.
Oh, hi there. I have a problem at night. My dog, Murray, about a 70-pound dog, goes out for a walk, so he says he has to, but actually he smells a... animal, and lately it turned out to be a skunk. So three times in the last 3 weeks, I've had to give him a shower with vinegar and everything at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, no fun.
No.
Now, are they solitary? Are they nocturnal? Do they have like a home near my house, or are they just in the woods and they happen to be passing by? That's my question.
What kind of a setting do you live in?
It's pretty rural. It's you know, off a seven house little, area that would be a farm as houses. But it's all around the watershed of the Saugerties Reservoir.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Oh, I think they live very close to you. There's probably one. There's probably several within 100 yards of where you're calling from right now, if you're calling from home. So if you keep taking the dog out, and he's not learning to stay away from the skunks either, huh?
He's stupid. Mommy, don't listen.
Skunks have the black and white markings, which make them stand out like the old black and white police car did.
Yeah.
And so once the animals learn about them, they see that black and white, and they decided, hey, that's not a good thing to go by.
But some dogs take a little longer to learn the lesson.
This is a dog that this summer chased three 200-pound bears up a tree.
Oh, boy.
Okay. He's a little stubborn.
Maybe you ought to keep that guy.
I know the personality.
Maybe you ought to keep that guy inside more often.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
I'm taking him for a walk.
You can bet you got plenty of skunks, as I say, within 100 yards of where you are right now.
There's nothing I can really do. No traps, no anything. Just keep him away.
Just talk to the dog and try.
Yeah.
Now you asked about nocturnal and things like that. They are largely nocturnal,
but it's not unheard of to see them in the day.
Okay.
Not unheard of. Sometimes they're sick in the day.
Okay.
Not like the raccoons or
sometimes
not.
Like rabies, right?
Yeah.
But they're crepuscular. They will come out as it's getting dark.
Yeah.
And then nocturnal. So if you take the dog out while it's still light, you're less likely to run into it.
Good plan.
But he's acting like he has to go, and so.
I learned to you know, when he's pulling my leg, so to speak.
Right.
So I just say, Mari, go back to sleep. You're not fooling me. You know, I'm not giving you another vinegar bath in the morning.
Well, Ralph, we got to take a break here, but thank you for calling. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Why are you shaking your head, Zach the engineer? You're not having fun? 1-800-3... I don't think he's having fun. 1-800-348-2551. I'm having fun, and Ward is having fun.
Support for WAMC comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. Kerry Haddad Gallery, presenting A Nod to the Past, with paintings by Mark Beard, abstract works by Bruce Murphy and James O'Shea, with new photographs by David Halliday, through August 17th, open daily, KerryHaddadGallery.com. Taft Farms, Great Barrington, now harvesting pesticide-free vegetables from their 200-acre IPM farm, sweet corn, berries, and 75 varieties of heirloom tomatoes. Open daily, taftfarms.com. And Water Furnace Systems, a green heating and cooling system, geothermal energy, an alternative energy source. Waterfurnace.com for dealer locations.
Vox Pop on WAMC, joined by Ward Stone. We are today, and so nice to have him here. Ward, here's one that comes via email from Chris in Cornwall on Hudson. Hi, Ward. I wonder if you could solve a mystery for us. For several years, we had at least one family of flying squirrels in our woods who would come to a tree near our deck for peanuts. They flew in from all directions when we whistled for them at dusk, and a couple of the braver ones even took peanuts out of our hands. They suddenly all disappeared last year and have not been back. Any idea what happened? That's from Chris in Cornwall on Hudson. Flying squirrels.
Well, I think no good came of those squirrels. I think they're probably passed away.
Oh, boy.
But flying squirrels are very common.
Why
You're
have I never seen
find
one?
Them. People live their whole lifetime, including in rural areas, and never see a flying squirrel. They're nocturnal, primarily nocturnal. And they have that skin flaps that come out between their limbs when they're out. So they can glide from spot to spot. They're sometimes in people's attics and people aren't aware of it.
Wow. So you don't think anything good happened
to them? They've never seen a flying squirrel. So you were most fortunate to have the flying squirrels there. And I would say keep it up, and you will find some more flying squirrels that'll be coming to your deck and eating the peanuts. And the flying squirrels tend to be tamer than regular squirrels and most wild animals are. So you're more likely to get them to take the peanuts. Not that the gray squirrels won't do it.
You really wouldn't want to feed them out of your hand,
but
would you?
They will come and do that kind of thing.
Okay. All right, let's go to Don and Red
Hook. There are two kinds of flying squirrels, by the way, a northern and a southern flying squirrel. Two species that live in our area of New York.
Okay. Which one is Rocky? Rocky. Bullwinkle's the moose. Rocky's the flying squirrel, right?
Rocky's the squirrel, yeah.
And he's a northern or southern?
I don't know.
Okay. Don and Red
Hook. We'll say northern since he's with the moose.
Don, you're up.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. For years, I've had trouble with squirrels and bird feeders. This is a common problem. So I splurged and bought a squirrel buster. And for a few years, I've had peace. Now they learn to unscrew the cap on the squirrel buster. Is there anything I could do? I'm so disappointed.
Okay. This is a common problem on many a program here. What to do about the squirrels eating the bird feed?
No. It's unscrewing the cap on my squirrel buster.
What's a squirrel buster?
It is, has an apparatus where only small birds can feed off it. If the squirrel puts their body on it, it closes.
I see. What do you think, Ward?
Well, obviously the squirrels have adapted and are taking the cap off so they can get to the seed, right?
Yeah.
So you've got to find some way to keep that cap on that they can't unscrew it.
Now I lock it.
You might.
You twist it and you lock it, and they untwist it.
Maybe a combination lock?
No, it's not a combination lock.
No, I'm kidding.
It's just a cap that you screw and tighten and lock.
All right.
But they can unlock. They twist it around and open it.
It says something for the intelligence of gray squirrels, doesn't it?
Yes.
What they can learn. I would probably try something simple at first, like duct tape. That seems to solve all the problems. And put duct tape on it and see. I mean, obviously, they can chew that off and get it off, but see if that slows them down.
What about rotten eggs? You mentioned before.
Well, that works on some things. I don't think it'll work on the bird seed.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot.
It would cause a mold. I don't think it'll work on the bird seed, but and the birds have to eat it too.
Now, I have heard, I believe on previous programs, that birds really aren't sensitive to cayenne pepper. And so potentially you could ward off the squirrels by putting some of that around there.
Yeah, and birds can't smell and things like that too. And yet we have condors and birds that really can hone in on something by the smell.
Yeah, okay, well.
So I would try some tape.
Okay.
And that's not a bad idea, your suggestion.
All right, let's go to Barbara.
Try that, but try the tape and see whether or not that'll slow them down so that at least more of the seed gets to the bird and less to the squirrels.
All right, let's go to Barbara in Rosendale. Barbara, you're on with Ward Stone.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a woodchuck problem on my property. There's a lot of open space, and there's a lot of shale, and they're digging their dens around the house and making lots of different tunnels and things like that. And I was wondering if you had some suggestions. We've got to have a heart traps out, but they won't go in the traps, and we can't watch them every morning and so forth like that. When we see the woodchucks and we put a trap out, they just disappear. So I think they know what those are. They're not going in them. Do you have any ideas about how we can, like, get them to move away from the house? Or they're welcome to be on the property. There's lots of land, but we don't want them around the house.
Okay.
Around the house, huh?
Yeah.
What are they doing around the house again?
They're digging holes. They're making dens. They're shale. They're doing damage to around the foundation.
Oh yeah. Okay.
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Around the foundation. Yeah. That. Well, you might try some of the smelly material there, where they're digging the holes. Gardening shops will sell material that is not harmful, but it is smelly. Of course, that's a problem when you put that around your house.
somebody told us to put a used cat litter around because the urine smell in the cat litter, the cats are a predator and they smell it and they leave. So I did that a little bit, and then it worked for a few days, and I had to keep doing it because they'll, after a while, the smell dissipates. But I could keep doing that if you think that would work.
How about a cat?
Well, cat litter, and it's got cat waste in it. Might have some toxoplasma in it. It might have some parasitic worms in it. I think I would go with a repellent that you can probably buy at a garden shop.
Okay.
And there are some. They don't smell too bad. They do have rotten eggs in them. But it's so dilute that you don't notice it that much. And you might try that, and that might make it so that they don't want to be there. They want to put their burrows somewhere else.
Okay.
And is that like the deer repellent, the same thing?
Yeah, or along the same line.
Right. Okay, got it. Well, we'll try that.
Thanks, Barbara. The number to call on this Vox Pop with Ward Stone is 1-800-348-2551. Dawson in Montague, New Jersey. You're on.
All right. Good afternoon, fellas. We got a camp up in the Adirondacks, and we have a red squirrel problem.
Okay.
Any ideas?
Well, red squirrels like to hang out where there are pine cones, mm-hmm. spruce cones. What are they doing? Going into the building, into the camp? And
Yeah, they go in the camp, and it seems like every surface that they can get on, they're there, and they leave their mark.
Right.
Little droppings.
They leave droppings, but also they probably will store pine cones and food in there, too,
mm-hmm.
in large piles. Well, I mean, you've got to make it as tight as you possibly can.
Okay.
So that the squirrels can't get in the first place.
Okay.
And maybe hardware cloth in some places is what you need.
Okay.
You know, you can tack that in or in so that you don't have any holes that the red squirrel can get in. And being the red squirrel is a lot smaller than the gray squirrel, it can get into some pretty small spots.
Yeah.
And they're extremely energetic. So I think that would be a good way to go. Obviously, you can do other things about red squirrels on the inside. But first, you know, you can snap trap them, you can shoot them and things of that sort. But I recommend trying to keep them alive, enjoy nature, enjoy the red squirrels outside of your camp.
Are they inside the camp? Are they inside your camp, Dawson?
Yes, they're in there.
Because if they're outside, I say let them be.
That's absolutely what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I'm saying that try to exclude them, chase them out. While they're out, find the holes where they're getting in and put hardware cloth and close up all the entrances that they're coming through.
Hmm.
Okay.
And then you'll be all set.
Okay.
All right. Is there any smells that they're not too fond of? Anything that'll keep them away, like a barrier we could put down? Like mint or peppermint or something?
Not that I know of, but there may be, but I don't know the answer to that.
All right, Dawson, thank you very much.
It hasn't been researched yet.
Let's go over to Russ in Waterford. Hiya, Russ, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have two thoughts for you and then a question. With the squirrel buster, if he takes the cap off and just drills a small hole halfway through the, you know, into the center of the cap and then puts a little self-tapping screw in there, screws it back on, and then chases the screw down, that should hold the cap in place. I would think the squirrel would be able to get past that screw.
Okay.
And the other thing I've tried with little holes around my foundation stuff is I pack it full of steel wool. They really don't like the texture of it, and they have trouble chewing through it, as far as those red squirrels are concerned.
Okay.
But the question I had was, I and I'm a hunter, so I noticed that this year there are a lot of cottontail rabbits. They're everywhere, and I had read somewhere that they cycle. They go through these 10-year cycles. I wonder if Ward had any thought on that.
Yeah, I was a little bit concerned because I see some areas that have got quite a few cottontails and other areas that don't.
Why does that concern you?
I just like to see all the wildlife.
Mm, I see.
And I like cottontails. I did a lot of hunting of cottontails when I was a kid over there in Spencertown area.
Yeah.
They were exceptionally abundant at that time. And I like to see them. I just like to see them around.
I live in the town of Half Moon, and I can yes, tell you there's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them in Half Moon, okay.
There are.
They certainly do have cycles, and they do get killed off by infectious diseases such as a bacteria, Pasteurella multocida, can kill a lot of rabbits in late summer.
You know,
infectious disease from rabbit to rabbit.
I saw an item out of Colorado in the news today, and I forget the name of the virus, but they are apparently saying, stay away if you see a dead rabbit in the woods. Now, this, again, was in Colorado. I have no idea if it's here, but apparently there is a disease, rabbit virus, that can transfer from humans, from rabbits to humans. Did you hear about this one?
No. When I hear about Colorado and I hear about anything that's a rodent or rodent-like,
yeah,
I usually think of plague.
The plague.
Pasteurella pestis.
No, but that's not this one.
It's not this
no.
one.
Well, Russ, thanks
a lot. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. Let's go to Jean in Charleston. Jean, you're on.
Hi. I've been lucky enough to have a family of crows move in across the road in some great big old maples and have been enjoying them a great deal. Last week, I was out there and they started to absolutely raise a major fuss. They were so loud, it was unbelievable. And they started flying across my little country road over to my side, and I saw they were chasing this little red fox. And they chased that fox all of the way down the hill behind my house, and I saw him go across the creek and lost him. I'm wondering, what on earth could that fox have been doing that really set those crows off?
Well, this is late in child rearing for the crows.
Uh-huh.
You know, their nestlings are getting out and moving around a little bit, but they are very, very careful about raising their young.
So they're protected.
So I suspect they were protecting young crows or an injured crow from the red
uh-huh.
fox. And
okay.
they will mob the fox. They will come after
they
the fox.
They certainly did.
And make a lot of noise. They'll do that with an owl, too.
Hmm.
An owl comes around, they will mob it and make the noise and do the same kind of a thing. So that's one of the things I like about the crows. And I noticed that you like the crows because you said you were lucky enough to have them come to
mm-hmm.
the maples.
Yes, they've always been one of my favorites. They're so smart. They have such great family sense. They take care of each other and everything. I find them to be a very enjoyable neighbors.
And very interesting. But that's what you were seeing. I think you were seeing the crows protecting young crows.
Okay, I suspect they will help. I wasn't sure.
With more than theirs.
Okay.
They
uh-huh.
will go to the aid of another crow, and more crows will come. 15,
uh-huh.
20 crows will come to protect somebody else's nest.
Mm.
Wow, that's great. Well, it's very enjoyable to have them around here. It's not like having them down in the areas by where, like I remember Auburn a few years ago, where they had literally thousands and thousands of them. I got just a couple little families, and they're wonderful.
Okay,
watch for any crow mortality. I was
okay.
One of the ones who discovered the West Nile virus in the Western Hemisphere.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is about the time you would expect some unusual mortality in crows if you have a local outbreak of West Nile.
Well, all right. Ward Stone, it is always a pleasure to have you here, and we have left the lines fully loaded today. So I apologize to everybody, Star and Ken, including Ken in New Paltz, who said he knows the origin of the word woodchuck, which I asked at the beginning of the show. So, sorry we didn't get to all of you, Cynthia and Debbie and everybody else who called in. Ward, We will see you back here again in not too long a time, all right?
Right.
Very good.
Thanks, Ray.
We enjoyed it very much. Support comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, presenting Vermont Beer, History of a Brewing Revolution, August 9th at 7 p.m., northshire.com. Kent Hicks Construction, West Chesterfield, Massachusetts, specializing in energy-efficient, net-zero, passive house, home building, deep energy retrofits, and historical restorations, serving Western Massachusetts, kenthicksconstruction.com. Kingsway Community Schenectady, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including rehabilitation and more, caring in the family tradition, kingswaycommunity.com, and the Museum of Creative Process at the Wilburton Inn, studying the creative process as a scientific conflict resolution mechanism, integrating psychology and morality into the moral science. Museumofcreativeprocess.com. Thanks again to Ward Stone. Thanks again to you for listening and for calling. Thanks to Zachary T. Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for answering our phones. Our show is produced by Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. You can take WAMC with you. Head to your Google Play Store or iTunes and get the WAMC app. Tomorrow, astronomy with Bob Berman, but right now a news update.